Summer. The summer rolls on.
Indeed, the summer of Swayze.
It is the summer of Swayze. Before we hop right into it.
You were hopping into it. I was more than willing
to
just step back and let this podcast breathe, but you had to go right into summer of Swayze.
I think you were really out of line by immediately trying to jump into the summer of
Swayze. You know, Dan, I'm sick and tired of all you want to talk about is summer of Swayze. We're having a nice breakfast in the morning. Summer of Swayze, summer of Swayze, summer of Swayze. I see you during the day while you're working. Hey, Bianca, summer of Swayze. You know, we're trying to have a nice, peaceful dinner with the dogs. They're gnawing on their kibble. Summer of Swayze. Oh, that's all I want to talk about is summer of Swayze. And I'm like, man, I love Swayze too. But just hold on. We'll talk about it in the podcast. And, you know, just try to restrain yourself for the podcast. And we start the podcast and you, of course, explode into a big confetti bomb of Swayze. And, you know, frankly, I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised.
I know you were lying with your first example because you said we were getting breakfast together. And outside of vacations and special, like, weekend plans for brunch and things. What's this?
It's nothing.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
I was saying that I don't... We never... I don't know what this tactic is. It's... confusing, and I don't like it.
It's not a tactic. It's just the sounds of outside. We live in a busy
city. You get up way earlier than me.
A busy city, and there's music flowing through the streets all the time.
We're in a closet filled with acoustic phones.
It's just not true.
Okay. Maybe we should get right to the Swayze.
Yeah, I know that's what you want to do anyway.
What is this character you're doing?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll stop.
You get up 80 hours before me every day. And were you about to start singing?
Did you say 80 hours?
Yeah, you get up like 80 hours before me every day.
Okay.
And you are a breakfast fiend. I have long maintained that breakfast is a myth.
Yeah, Dan, just lay the most contentious aspect of a relationship on the table for all the podcast listeners to hear and judge us.
We are different people, you and I. We get along incredibly well. We have a lot of similar interests. But even within those interests, we have many differences. We both love the video games, and I like jumping on things and shooting things. And you're more of a thinking and strategizing and building a character and getting wrapped up in a narrative, right? Is that fair to say?
I like shooting things. I'm not into the jumping.
Jumping is my favorite thing.
I am terrible at platforming.
Jumping is the best thing in video games.
That's just not true.
Hey, jump button. It's the first thing you need in a game.
Unless you're talking about the Scroll of Icarian Flight from The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind, which enhances your acrobatic skill by 1,000 points that will inevitably result in your death. But by God, does it feel good jumping in the air like that.
That does have a jump button, and despite the fact that I've never played Morrowind, I'm going to go back on what I said because Ocarina of Time, one of my favorite games, and many Zelda games, do not have jump buttons, and yet they are among my favorites. But Mario is in my DNA. And jumping is the heart and soul of Mario.
Yeah, I know that game's all about jumping.
It is.
What's the band Criss Cross that did the song?
Jump Around.
Jump.
Yes.
Yeah, that might as well be the Mario theme.
They licensed it for Mario 3.
Really?
During the Koopaling fights.
Really?
No.
Oh.
It's all been like Koji Kondo, very catchy original music.
Or that Destiny's Child song, Jumpin'.
You know that song? I think I know that one, yeah. Boy, Gizmo, figure out what you want. This dog is just running all around this closet. Doesn't know what he wants here. That's a fun time. It is the summer, as they say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's the summer, all right.
It's a breakfast. I've said it before. I'll say it again. And you, I know I'm barking up the wrong tree here. I'm preaching to the wrong choir. I don't have the right audience here. It's a myth.
It's a myth?
Yes. It is a meal you eat at a certain time of day, and all food tastes the exact same no matter what time of day it is. So people can say, oh, eggs, breakfast. No. You can eat a cheeseburger or some buffalo wings or a bunch of burnt ends for breakfast or a big pizza, and it functions just as well as it would have functioned at 7 p.m.
Let's say that it's 7 p.m.
Yes.
And you eat a hamburger.
Yeah, okay.
What would you say to someone that calls that a snack? Like, I'm just having a little snack at 7 p.m. I'm eating a hamburger.
We're not talking about the size of the meal. We're talking about the taste. Would you say
you're
that...
You're removing meaning from meals. You're the meaning of meal exciser.
Am I?
Yes.
Would you say that a buffalo wing tastes differently at 8 p.m. as it does 8 a.m.?
You're talking about buffalo wings. I hear you just eviscerating my soul, Dan. I don't appreciate it. This is a personal attack, and I will not stand for it.
I love you. I just...
Yeah, right. You love me. You love your buffalo wings at any time of the day.
Hey, when we got up in Minnesota recently, mm-hmm. we went to a place, and what did I get?
Wings.
Yeah. And it was my first meal of the day,
and
they
were
delicious. And you got a breakfast platter, is that correct?
That's right, Dan. I got a breakfast platter.
Yes.
Because I'm a normal, healthy human girl.
Well, I don't limit my life and the things I eat and enjoy by the time on the clock. I enjoy by the what it tastes like.
All right. Well, nothing has any meaning then, Dan. Nothing. Why are we even here?
It's not all breakfast.
It is all breakfast. Breakfast is a metaphor for everything. The crispy bacon, that's hard work. Fried eggs, that's love and sweetness and sunshine. Some baked beans or whatever, English people do that. That's something else about life.
Yeah.
But yeah.
If you were to ask Gizmo right now, he would say my big toe because he is aggressively gnawing on my big toe underneath this Pizzone table.
All right, I'm going to scoop him up.
Okay, we got a scoop going on here. Okay, she's moving down. She's got headphones on. She's deftly navigating the cables and microphones here on the table. She's grabbing a small dog, and now he's just kind of sitting in her lap and staring at her. All right, Gizmo, buddy.
Yes.
Are you ready for the Summer of Swayze
yes.
to continue?
Yes, I am.
All right, week two, Summer of Swayze.
Summertime.
And we're watching Swayze. Roadhouse.
Indeed.
1989.
Now, Dan, I heard about this movie throughout my life. This is my first time seeing it. Despite hearing about it and knowing it's a Swayze flick that's beloved, I had no idea that this was considered one of the, like, it's so bad, it's good kind of movies.
I don't think I realized that either, because all I ever heard, kind of growing up and going to school and stuff, was everyone's like, oh, Roadhouse, badass. You know, it's great. And I gotta say, watching this, which, by the way, I think you can watch it on, like, Showtime. We saw it on YouTube TV. It might be free with ads some places. Search for Roadhouse. I watched this, and I thought, this movie kicks ass.
Yeah, it's great. It's extremely campy. I thought it would be a little more dramatic and less campy. Like I said, I wasn't expecting it to be like so bad it's good territory. But it is an absurd film.
It is, but I don't think I thought the word campy while I was watching this.
Dan, Patrick Swayze plays Dalton,
uh-huh.
a bouncer with a master's degree in philosophy from NYU.
That's what I'm saying. If it was a dumb campy movie, he'd be like, ugh, I majored in beef jerky. But no, he's like, he's doing like Tai Chi next to the river. He's like thoughtful and cares about philosophy. And he's a quiet, tough dude. He's a stoic, tough dude.
This is a world where bouncers are apparently celebrities because the mere utterance of Dalton's name made people gasp.
Well, you are not from the area around Kansas City as I am. So I can tell you that this was basically a documentary of the bar scene in and around Kansas City.
So, like, bouncers had a reputation?
No, not at all. Oh. Well, in Lawrence, yeah, there was. My neighbor was a bouncer at Louise's downtown on Mass Street. He had a reputation for being no-nonsense, kick you right out of there. Mm-hmm. There's the guy at Harbor Lights with the cool beard. Yeah, everyone had a reputation. Everyone knew the bouncers at the various bars.
Well, saying the guy from Harbor Lights with the cool beard is different than just saying, I don't know if it's a first or a last name.
It's whatever. Just Dalton. It's like Madonna.
Just Dalton.
Yeah.
And then striking fear into everyone around.
It is true. Like, in the beginning of this movie, they're like, Dalton, you're the best. And he's like, I'm not the best. Wade Garrett, he's the best.
And that's
Sam Elliott. Yeah. Which you, something broke in your brain when you saw him. And I told you it was the cowboy from Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I think you've only seen him with a giant mustache.
I have. Like, he's had that mustache, not just in Big Lebowski. Like, that's his thing now.
Yeah.
It's like how Diane Keaton always wears that weird suit.
Yeah, they had that Super Bowl commercial where his mustache starts doing crazy stuff to the horse rap. What's that song? The Old Town Road.
Okay.
Yeah, remember the commercial where he's going to get in a pistol duel and his mustache starts doing all sorts of waggly stuff?
He's also in, for some reason, I watched that show Grace and Frankie on Netflix.
Oh, right. That's with, like the old ladies that have fun.
Jane Fonda.
Right. Isn't that that's the premise, right?
The old ladies who have fun.
I think that's it, right?
Anyway, well, we don't need to cover that show for paying the stream now.
I just did.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's covered. That's the episode. I'll cut that out.
Yeah, it's her and Lily Tomlin, but Sam Elliott is a love interest of hers in the show, and he's sporting the same mustache and stuff. So it's his brand now. And it's interesting, like, how some people do that, because, like, especially for actors, because I feel like you're kind of, it's good to embrace that, because, like, you're always going to be the go-to guy for some kind of stoic cowboy type of character.
Yeah.
But, I mean, isn't it kind of limiting? But I'm sure he's at such a status now that it doesn't even matter. But...
Yeah, and even if you get typecast, it's like, I mean, that dude gets work. Like, I've seen Sam Elliott playing that type of role in a million different movies, and he's getting work. He fits that role, too.
Yeah.
He's got the voice, he's got the look, he's got the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, it seems just completely natural. And you know, seeing him in this movie, it was surprising to see him without the mustache, but I thought he was great in this role.
He was. He's just a cool, tough, older bouncer. Swayze's kind of he's not new, but he's kind of the now, whereas Sam Elliott was the then.
Well, yeah, it seems like they kind of, like, have a mentor-mentee relationship, and Sam Elliott, like, taught him the ways of the stoic cooler.
Yeah.
And Swayze is like the next generation.
Yeah, and I love Swayze's whole approach to cooling or bouncing, which is just, hey, just be nice. You know, just be nice. It's very much the Majima thing from Yakuza 0, where he's just like, kill him with kindness. And I think it's way cooler. You know, he's like definitely not out there looking for a fight. He's just walking around being cool, instantly cool as hell movie.
His hair. We haven't mentioned his hair.
Yeah.
It's
really doing some stuff there. It's a lot of him sitting around, looking around, all cool, like, smoking a cigarette. And then when something's going down, someone's up to something, he just kind of calmly approaches and is like, hey, why don't you get out of here? And then the person's always like, no! Because it's the worst bar in the world. And instantly, everyone's just breaking bottles. Like, there's a scene at the beginning where, like, it's like a 90-person brawl. People are getting thrown over counters. Women are just tearing their clothes off. There's, like, chicken wire protecting the band, but, like, just things are shattering all around it. People are getting stabbed.
Yeah, that's the Double Deuce when Dalton arrives after I guess the owner of the Double Deuce traveled pretty far to acquire Dalton after hearing about the legend of this guy.
Yeah.
Says he wants the best. He wants Dalton. And so Dalton comes and begins to try to reform this bar, which is, as you describe, a complete madhouse. So why would you ever go to this bar? It doesn't seem like anyone's having fun. People are just getting beaten the crap out of. They're dealing drugs. Women are getting groped. Like, glasses are falling everywhere. Bottles are being thrown at the band.
I'll say, as a longtime purveyor of dive bars, myself and my father, I literally would not exist without the Red Balloon, where my dad met my mom. It is in my blood. It is in my being. I love dive bars, but there is a bridge too far for a dive bar, and I do feel like the Double Deuce in Kansas City, as it is depicted here, is too much. But I think if you kind of split the difference between a nice low-key bar and the Double Deuce, I think that's the sweet spot. My dad and I always liked going to bars where it's like, okay, just jukebox, and it's kind of dingy and dirty, and it's just cheap beer, and there's just Skinner and Seeger playing on the jukebox, and there's always the chance that you'll see someone get put through a table, or a knife fight will happen in the parking lot. It'll never involve you. You know, we never got into a fight. But every once in a while, it's like you hear a commotion, you're like, whoa! And you look over, and you're drunk, and you're like, look at that! They're punching each other! And that's a fun time.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that any bar that I can't imagine, like, Gizmo hanging out in is not a place I want to be. I like to be comfortable. I like the temperature to be good. You know, if I want, I'd like a good cocktail menu. You know, I'm not big on beer or whatever.
Yeah.
That being said, not the end of the world if there's no cocktail menu. But I comfort is the key for me. Comfort is key. That being said, I feel like there's always the looming threat of violence at any bar just because of the presence of alcohol, and some people get really rowdy when they drink.
Back in the day, I don't relish seeing fights, and I don't think I've seen one in many, many years. But back in the day, there was something about, like, look at these idiots.
Yeah, I don't get fights. I don't understand the compulsion to want to repeatedly punch someone.
Oh.
I don't get that. Anyway, I feel like when I was watching this movie and he first arrived at the Double Deuce, in my mind I was like, is this going to be like, what's the name of that reality TV show with Chef Irvine, Robert Irvine, Restaurant? Was it Restaurant 911?
Never heard of that guy.
It's kind of like Hell's Kitchen almost, where...
Bring in an expert, or yeah. A Nathan for you, where an expert comes in.
Well, this is specifically about, like, the hospitality industry.
Right, so the Kitchen Nightmares, right. Yeah.
Yeah, Kitchen Nightmares, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what the name of the show is.
The Gordon Ramsay one?
Oh, that's the Gordon Ramsay one. Well, at any rate, I expected it to be like, okay, are we just going to see, is this going to be like a makeover show where like Dalton comes over and like there's this crummy bar and there's so much violence and then we see like, okay, the clientele becomes more calm and then the decorations start and there's a new menu and like fancy drinks. And, like, is that what's going to happen? But
yeah, that's the end. It's totally not going to be the townsfolk murdering a man with multiple guns and then a polar bear falling on a man.
Yeah, it becomes clear pretty quickly that in this town, it's not so much the bar that's the problem, but rather this evil business mongol named Wesley.
It's a very mob situation. It's like a small-scale mob operation where, what's his name? Wesley, Brad Wesley. Which, by the way, did you recognize the guy that played him?
I've definitely seen him, but I don't remember what from.
It's another movie we've seen Sam Elliott in. In Big Lebowski, he's Jackie Treehorn, the porn producer who draws the penis thing.
Oh.
Yes, he's like, I'm
it's
Jackie
one of my
Treehorn.
Scenes.
Yes, yo, it's amazing.
I love that.
But yeah, he's a real slime ball.
Yeah, and he's like essentially for like quote unquote security, much like the mob will do. Like he insists on taking like 10% cut of all the businesses in town. And, you know, naturally, it's unsustainable for a lot of businesses. One of the places adjacent to the Double Deuce is this little hardware store called Red's.
Yeah.
The guy who owns it is just, like, salt of the earth kind of guy. Seems really great. Happens to be the uncle of Swayze's love interest in the movie, so it's another connection there.
It's Elizabeth Doc Clay. She's
yes.
a doctor.
Yeah, she's just, like... Like, you know how sometimes in movies there'll be people that are just unrealistically attractive?
Yeah.
Like, the kind of people you only see, and, like, it was just absurd that the small town doctor would be...
Foxy Doctor?
Yeah, whatever the name of this... I forget the name of it. Kelly Lynch, I think, maybe?
Yes, yes.
Anyway, so this guy's great. Red is great. He's clearly being thoroughly abused by this mob. And that, I feel like the way they abuse this guy is like another one of the catalysts, like to get Swayze kind of over the edge. Because Dalton in this movie is very stoic. Like you mentioned earlier, we see him practicing Tai Chi for like a really long time beside a river. Wearing nothing and or like no shirt or whatever. And like he often will just wear like karate gis. Like,
yeah.
With regular pants.
It's like a casual gi. It's just like, you know, it could be a shirt that he's just not really buttoning all the way, but it looks very gi-like.
There's like a martial arts essence to everything he wears.
Yes.
And just in the way he presents himself. You know, I feel like his dialogue, he doesn't have a ton of dialogue in this movie.
Also, he has a dark past, which Sam Elliott knows about.
Right.
And it's because he did a throat rip. He did a literal MacGruber throat rip.
Yeah.
Which... By the way, there are numerous, because I think I saw this movie once many years ago, but I don't really remember a lot about it. It's very clear that the guys that made MacGruber had seen this movie, because
there were
a lot of things. There was the throat rip has got to be first and foremost, because like,
for sure,
it's referenced from his past, and then he does a throat rip near the end in Roadhouse. MacGruber does like six throat rips in the movie. But there's the reveal of the car when Swayze's like kind of pulling the blanket off his car or whatever. I feel like it's almost shot for shot, the one in MacGruber, except for MacGruber, he's putting in his Blaupunkt, car stereo.
Uh-huh.
And then also when he's getting stitched up by Foxy Doctor, it's very much Kristen Wiig taking the gun or the bullet out of MacGruber's balls, the I Like Holes scene. They're... Even, like, a lot of the music cues and stuff,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, man, okay, Jorma must be a huge MacGruber fan.
Yeah,
these,
like, action movies from... You would consider this an action movie, right?
Yeah.
These movies from the 80s, I feel like, were the prototypes for, like, movies like MacGruber and future action movies that would kind of parody them in some ways, like all the tropes from these movies. They're the ones that establish these tropes.
Oh, yeah. And there's something beautiful about it being done with no irony at all.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like, no, this is serious, cool shit. Like, just the most cool guy bullshit in the world. Like, at the beginning, he gets, like, his arm stabbed.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, you know, in the bathroom, sewing just sewing it up and everything. It's just, he is a straight up cool dude in this. He is a cool dude. Swayze is a cool dude in Dirty Dancing.
He's very cool.
This, in this one, he is way more of the, like, prototype cool dude, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as a person that appreciates people that are more fully fleshed out, I guess, characters that are more fleshed out, I feel like in Dirty Dancing, you know, just the fact that he was a dancer and, like, an artist in that way made him, like, a little more, like, contrast to his badassery, you know? Yeah.
He's a philosophy major who does Tai Chi! There's your contrast.
Yeah, but it's so ridiculous, Dan. The whole
I didn't even think that.
The whole universe of this movie is so completely absurd. Like, the one scene where one of Wesley's, like, henchmen is just driving around in a monster truck.
Yeah, he is.
Literally a monster truck.
Yeah, they're bad dudes, Bunk.
Just, it's like a monster truck like you would see someone driving a Ford F-150.
Oh, I'm well aware, and it's very cool.
He takes this monster truck, and, you know, just another instance of this mob kind of abusing the local businesses, takes this monster truck and goes to, like, a local Ford dealership or something. Mm-hmm. And just drives over a bunch of the cars, demolishes a bunch of the cars, and the structure itself, like the actual office.
Yes.
Which, come on, Dan. That's
how you know he's a bad guy.
Well, yeah, but...
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Anyway, that's just like the level of absurdity of
subtlety.
This movie. Yeah, okay.
Yes. Also, they are, like, doing the mob stuff of, like, they're blowing up the auto shop. They blow mm-hmm. up the farmer's place to kind of get at Swayze. But also, they're, like, stopping liquor shipments from arriving at the bar because the bar is kind of giving them trouble. So they're showing up with all their, like, henchmen. Which, by the way, Terry Funk is in this. And the Terry Funk. And he does a heel turn in this because he's kind of, well, I don't know if he was ever a good dude.
He seemed like he was kind of always an asshole.
That's true. But he was working for the Double Deuce, which, you know, we're to root for the Double Deuce in this mm-hmm. movie. But right away, Swayze comes in as the cooler and is like, you get out of here. You get out of here. You were stealing stuff. You get out of mm-hmm. here. You get out. And then Terry Funk joins the bad dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Terry Funk punching people in the face in this movie.
Yeah, he was great in this movie. By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, like, the Double Deuce, as I said earlier, it, like, undergoes a transformation throughout the movie. I feel like the exterior, the original exterior, was way cooler than, like, what... Because the updated version made it look like it was just, like, a TGI Fridays or something.
Yeah, it looked like a very, like, oh, it's the 80s bar, you know?
Yeah, whereas, like, the nonchalant exterior, like, that it originally had was just like, oh, you go inside and then it's really cool. It's like, oh, this is awesome. Like, there's a lot of bars in New York City that are like that, where it's just like, oh, you wouldn't expect anything just walking past it, but, like,
right.
You go inside and it's like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah. It keeps upgrading throughout the film, like on one of those like open world games where you have like properties you can own, like Vice City, and it's like, oh, I put more money into it, and now I go back, and it's nicer.
Your
and,
little house in Zelda.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, just keep upgrading it.
Yeah. But this evil guy's got the whole town by his balls. He owns the police. There's like no police presence. I don't think we see one police officer in this whole movie.
No,
it's a lawless town where this asshole is in control of everything, essentially.
Yeah. No. They do talk about the police and they show him at one point, but they are in the pocket.
Right. Yeah. It's a totally lawless place. And he like, incidentally, Dalton rents this really awesome room or apartment, I guess, from this farmer. It's like he rents the farmhouse, and it's like the farmer like went above and beyond to make this an awesome livable place, because it's like this huge open studio with like
it's like a nice Airbnb sitting,
like a little areas to sit and read, and like it's really cool. Huge windows, and it's right by this river, and right across the river is Wesley's giant like grotesque mansion compound.
Yeah.
So we see at some point Dalton watching like what's going on over there, and like they just seem to be having a loud party where like guys are throwing women into the water.
It's just a cocaine rich guy party.
Yeah. So this Wesley guy has no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Even just driving around, he's swerving like he owns the roads.
Yeah.
He's a total asshat.
He's just a sniveling villain. Yeah.
And this is one of those movies, like while I was watching it, that like he was so irredeemable in a way that you never really see in movies now anymore. I feel like now they try to portray, like, you know, gray area or whatever. He was so evil that, like, every scene he was in where he didn't get his comeuppance, I was like, come on, when is this going to happen?
Yeah.
When is this going to happen?
Yeah.
He has this, like, his primary henchman, I guess. I forgot the guy's name. You know who I'm talking about?
The guy with the earring?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's,
yeah,
like, always attached to Wesley.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel like the climax of the movie is his showdown with Swayze, right?
They have that big fight next to the river, yeah.
Where the guy says to Swayze, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
That's correct.
Which is a weird thing to say in a fight, right?
I haven't been in any fights, but if I did, well, I've never been to prison, so that would be an extra weird thing to say. But
it always confused me. Like, I don't know if this actually happens in real life, but when people are fighting and like they're like, oh, soak my dick or whatever. It's like, but that's a nice thing to do to someone. Right.
Yeah, there's a bunch of weird implications going on there.
Yeah, it was confusing, but a throat rip does happen in that scene.
It's just a full-on MacGruber throat rip.
We get to see it. It's great.
Yeah. I was trying to think while watching it that, you know, you see the one and you hear about the one in this. There really are, like, a lot in MacGruber. There's the one where he does the double throat rip. There's the guard when Ryan Philippe is first kind of creeped out by the idea. There's the one where they do it together by the hand. There's the guy with
Is it Ryan Philippe or Philippi?
Philippi, maybe.
Oh.
There's the guy that they put the You're All Wet water cup on. There's a lot of throat ripping going on.
Yeah, there's a lot. They that's, like, what they took from that movie.
It's amazing to me because MacGruber is so incompetent at so many things and is just clearly a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
But he is actually really good at ripping throats.
Yeah.
Like, he can't shoot a gun, but he can rip someone's throat out with his bare hands, no problem.
Honestly, that's probably harder to do than shooting a gun.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
I mean, he's got his thing.
Yeah.
Yes. This movie had a very... do you remember when I was reading that book, In Broad Daylight?
Yes.
Is this guy, Ken McElroy, actually in Missouri, probably not far at all from where this fictional town of Missouri was, where he was just like, saying the town asshole would be like, he was just a massive criminal and sociopath, and like just terribly abusive to his family and dogs, and you know, just pulling like shotguns, like shooting old men in the face at candy stores with shotguns. Like, he was just, everyone was terrified of him, but he like knew the law enough to like how he couldn't get anything actually pinned on him. He would like steal everyone's livestock, like every bad thing you could imagine. Ken McElroy was doing in real life in right outside Kansas City, I think the 80s, maybe late 70s.
Wow.
There's a book called In Broad Daylight about it. And it ends with the whole town being like, all right, well, no one's prosecuting him. He's able to like weasel his way out of every court appearance and stuff like that. So they just basically, in a town square in broad daylight, the town just kills him with guns.
Everyone is all in on it. And it's just like, hey,
yeah, we're all
cover
gonna
each other's asses.
Yep. And that's exactly what happens at the end of this movie, is they all go to Jackie Treehorn's mansion there, and the town folks just kind of show up. Swayze does a little bit of like stealth stuff, pushing polar bears onto a fat guy.
Let's just mention Wesley's house. It's a big, gross mansion, But he has, like, taxidermied animals everywhere.
Yeah. They want to make him as despicable as possible. So it's like, oh, here's, like, a whole wall of his pictures of killing, like...
Yeah. It's not even like he has a trophy room. It's a trophy house. Like, there's animals everywhere. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of them takes out a henchman because it's a polar bear that falls on a fat guy. And then all the townsfolk, Red and everyone, the farmer guy, the nice farmer guy, he doesn't die. He shows up with a gun and they all just blast the hell. It's full like Ed 209, just like blasting this dude.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the farmer guy, just to go back for a second, when his house gets blown up by the mob and Swayze runs in and like saves him, he's wearing that old guy like onesie that
like red Santa's onesie. Yeah, with like a butt flap.
Yes. I love that.
Which, by the way, he looks exactly like, you might not have ever seen this box art for the game Phalanx on Super Nintendo. It is a space shooter, like a Galaga-type space shooter, but the cover is a guy that looks like him and dresses like him, sitting in a wooden chair on a porch playing a banjo.
Huh.
No space elements whatsoever, but it's a space shooter. Okay. It's one of the most confounding box arts I've ever seen.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird one to see a blockbuster and be like, what the hell is this? And you look at the back and it's like, this looks like every space shooter.
It's weird.
Yes. But yeah, the final line of the movie is a polar bear fell on me, and then Dalton and Foxy Doctor make out in a river, and all is well with the town.
Yeah, seems like he's going to stick around, maybe. I don't know. His nomadic ways come to an end. He's got the Foxy Doc.
Yeah.
I mean, what else does he need? Double Deuce is happening and happy. Yeah. It's happy and happening.
It's true.
Yeah, it was great movie. I could see why everyone loves it, because it's so absurd.
A lot of punching and kicking.
Rowdy Harrington is the director. I love that name. He also directed Gladiator. Did you know that?
I think I looked up his
wiki. I know. It's a different... It's okay. Like a sports...
It's like 92 or something,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, sports drama starring Cuba Gooding Jr. But I just wanted to say that just to confuse people for a second.
You confuse me.
It's one of those lying by omission things.
Yeah. I see. What you said was technically true.
Yes.
Okay, that's fun.
Right.
Great.
Thanks.
I like this movie a lot. I think ultimately... This is very much the my type of movie of just dumbass, like, I want to watch some dudes get fucked up, watch a good guy fuck up some bad guys. And it's very good in that vein, whereas I think Dirty Dancing was more like, this is just a really good movie.
It's a really good movie. You know? I will say I was entertained the whole way watching this.
Yes, me too.
I feel like it was really short because it went really fast.
I think it was like it was 2 hours, but it went pretty fast.
Yeah,
like,
it was really fun. It was really fun. I would say... I don't want to speak for you, but I would say we're 2 for 2 of the Summer of Swayze.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I remember the first time watching this, not knowing Terry Funk was in it and being like, what? Terry Funk. And you know what? He's really good in this. Like, he didn't have like a long movie career, or I can't even really name other stuff he was in. But like, he plays that type of just like salty tough guy really, really well.
Well, that's probably who he is.
Actually, that is extremely who he is. Yes. But no, I think Roadhouse was really, really good. So that was 89. Dirty Dancing was what, 86?
Yes.
Man, Swayze.
Or 87. I think maybe it was released in 87.
Okay. Yeah. Swayze, just, boy, he had a prime period there where he was just putting out the good stuff.
Yeah, I think I read on IMDb that, like, maybe the tagline for this movie was something to the effect of, the dancing's over, now it's time to get dirty or something.
Nice.
Like that.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be it for our chat on this week's installment of the Summer of Swayze here on Painting the Stream. And we want to give a special thanks to everyone who is a patron.
Thanks, patrons.
Thank you, patrons. If you go to patreon.com/paintingthestream, we got some little bonus stuff for you. You get ad-free versions of the podcast each and every week. You have access to our Discord that we share with our Twitch subscribers, the old Rikert's Market Discord. You get episodes a day early. You get them on Saturday instead of Sunday. And you also get your own custom Bonku, written for you by Bonk.
That's right. You become a patron. I take out my little ink bottle and quill and my piece of parchment paper.
It's true.
And I light my lantern and nestle in for a nice long evening of writing. And I scribe for you a unique Bonku to tantalize your soul and enrich your life. This week, we are honoring our dear friend, Zach. No C, just K.
Oh, okay, cool.
Just a K. So that's, I feel like, the coolest way to spell
it. That's a real cool way to do it.
It reminds me of a lightning bolt. I don't know why. It's just like, Zach.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool name. Zach's obviously extremely cool, and he has great taste because he's a patron of our Patreon.
Yes.
He himself is not a Patreon, I don't think.
That doesn't happen. No.
Anyway, Zach, here's your Bonku. He waited for Zack in his trench coat and glasses. This was top secret.
Oh, wow. What was he up to?
Zack's got embroiled in some really bad shit. I don't want to talk about it. I think he would be upset with me if I mentioned it, if I committed it to the recording.
Zack, keep it to yourself.
I can tell you when we're done recording, okay. But rest assured, it's insane. It's just wild.
Okay.
It involves zoo animals, the mafia, cafeteria lunch servers.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's the highest, like, politicians, like, congressmen and women. Bananas. It's
extraterrestrials?
It's insane. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it's wild.
Well, Zack, keep it to yourself. We don't want any of our patrons or listeners getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you very much for your support.
Thanks, Zack. Hope to see you around the Discord.
Yes, we'll see you there in Reichert's Market. Also, a little fun announcement here for the folks. If you go to podcastawards.com, the Podcast Awards are a award ceremony for podcasts, as you might have surmised. They have been doing their thing since 2005. They have a bunch of different categories, many different winners throughout the years. And we are a potential nominee. I don't really know how it works exactly. There is a list of podcasts that you can vote on in different categories. Painting the Stream is up for the TV and film category.
Mm.
So I'm not quite sure if the vote goes in and then that determines a final like five list.
Because
mm-hmm. right now there's more than five. But if you go to podcastawards.com and then you go to the TV and film category, you can vote for Painting the Stream. We would love to get our first podcast award there. And I think you'll need to put in an email. You can, if you got like a junk email or a temp email you want to make or anything like that. Just if you can throw your vote in there, that helps us out.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone really wants to hear our acceptance speech, which we will definitely make a video of and post on our Patreon if we win. So.
I think I looked it up, and I think they usually do a ceremony thing, but yeah, Zoom in these days, for sure. But voting will be open throughout the month of July. What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
Okay. What?
Just the prospect of doing
an awards acceptance speech.
Yeah, I've never even thought about what that would entail, but that would be really fun.
It would be fun. I hope there's a trophy involved. But we can't get that trophy if we don't get nominated. So if you go to podcastawards.com, the TV and film category, give us a vote for Painting the Stream. You'll see it in the drop-down list. That would be much appreciated. Also, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter.
Please do.
Do that. What else? You can give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. That helps us out quite a bit. And outside of that, thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song. Oh, I see Bonk. I thought you were touching something on my phone. I was like, what are you doing? A Hue card.
Yeah, Dan,
thank
come
you.
On.
Jeez, we usually do that way earlier.
It's a foundational segment of our show.
It is.
I mean, we don't deserve this award, man. We're forgetting the Hue game.
Okay, well, we're going to say the Hue game, so we're still eligible for okay. The podcast award.
All right.
Are school uniforms a good or bad idea?
Our school uniforms. Here's what I'll say. I remember when we lived in the Upper East Side, there was like a school nearby, like academies. There were academies all around, and they had uniforms. And it would be in the middle of the winter, and these girls would be walking around with, I swear to God, skirts that would barely cover their asses. It just boggled my mind. Like, and it was obviously uniforms because they were all wearing the same thing.
So that was the official thing that they were asked
yeah,
to wear.
It was just mind boggling. I think that is a little absurd. I think I am generally against uniforms because I feel like what you choose to wear is a self-expression. You know, depending on who you are, you might not feel comfortable wearing a certain uniform mm-hmm. if it conflicts with who you identify as or your personal style or like what you feel comfortable wearing based on what, like, you know, I am self-conscious about certain parts of my body that I wouldn't want to wear a uniform that highlights these parts. So for example. So I think it's bad. I feel like the one redeeming quality is just like everyone's even playing
yes.
field. But I feel like the pros of letting kids choose their own clothes greatly outweighs the cons. So
I agree with everything you said. And if I were like, if it went to a vote of like, hey, across the country, we're going to do uniforms or nay, I would say nay to uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that for the greater good, because for everything you just said, I totally agree with
mm-hmm.
you. Personally, as someone who went to Catholic school and wore a uniform for, you know, until mid fifth grade, I personally liked it. I would love personally to have a uniform just all the time, not just at school.
You know, you could do that, right?
Well, right, but it, people think it's weird if you wear the same. I'm saying if everyone's doing it, it's less weird because I am someone who has never understood how to dress. I have never understood fashion. And every time they used to have dress down days in Catholic school, and I just never knew what to wear. I never knew how sizes worked. I never knew how to buy pants that fit me. I never knew any of that stuff. I still don't really know. I've gotten better, but I don't know. It's and so I never had to worry about that until I went to public school in mid-fifth grade. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't know, do these pants or shorts fit me? And then I'd go to school and everybody would make fun of me. And it's just like, oh man, I didn't know. I'm just trying to, like my entire objective with clothes forever was just like, I don't want anyone to notice me. It was never, I want to look cool. It was never, I want to look different or make a statement with my fashion. I just wanted to blend in and have no one know I'm even there. Mm-hmm. And it became harder because I just didn't know how to dress myself. Mm-hmm. But that is me personally. I found comfort in the uniform. But I, like I said, for the greater population, I would definitely say no uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on.
Yeah. So, all right. Now with that, thank you so much for saving the Hugh game.
Of course.
I would not ever forgive myself if we did not do this new tradition.
I know so. You're all excited about Roadhouse, but we can't let that slip through the cracks.
We can't let the Hugh slide. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Bonk, thank you for joining me here in this Bizone each and every week.
Thank you. You too.
Everyone toss us an old... You immediately look very confused at your own
statement.
I don't
know if what I said was right, but whatever.
Vote for us, podcastawards.com. We will see you next week as the summer of Swayze rolls along.
Take care.
Goodbye.